This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now. I'm Graham Richardson, sitting in for Christy Cameron now. I had so much fun sitting in for her on Monday, I decided to sneak over to her house, pull the power on her house in the middle of her show so that I could sub in again. I'm just kidding. Hopefully Christy will be back shortly. She's obviously working from home. I'm here for television in the studio, so I'm now helping her out while power gets restored, hopefully back at Shea Christie, and I will take you on until 6 o'clock if we don't get power back. So this is the way we're rolling with it today. Pandemic, power issues, all that sort of stuff. We're going to hear at 4 o'clock the plan for the rest of the province on education. And quite rightly, everybody is focusing on opening schools, but that is not the whole story. When you talk about kids learning from home, it's a fairly complicated question depending on your perspective and what your kids need. Sarah McConnell's a parent whose kids are learning from home. And Sarah joins us now. And Sarah, if I understand this correctly, I've just jumped in here at the last minute. Apologies for that. But your kids were in an alternative education program that had to shut down. What does that mean for you day to day at home?
Well, first of all, thanks for jumping in and helping out.
No problem.
I'll try and help out as much as I can as well. I think a lot of people are learning about our education system for the first time as a result of the pandemic, and having kids learning at home is a new experience for a lot of families. Our family has had our kids in school. We've had them learning at home with us, and we've also had them participating in alternative education programs. And this all started pre-pandemic. So pandemic schooling is one thing, but this is, you know, this is a next level.
So if I understand you, sorry to interrupt, if I understand you correctly, pre-pandemic, you were still sort of a hybrid family. You were doing a series of things, not just because of the pandemic.
Yes, we were.
Okay.
Two of my kids have special needs, and the staff at our schools are incredible, and they do everything they can. But the reality is there's not enough teachers, there's not enough time. And so in order to get our kids the best possible opportunities, we have looked elsewhere to find programs, find support systems that help them learn and grow. And it hasn't always been as part of the school system. Now, that being said, with the pandemic, all of a sudden, I'm grateful that schools are reopening for so many families. But for a lot of us, you know, thousands of kids in Ottawa, their support systems are gone and aren't reopening because we're still under a stay-at-home order, and we're still there's still restrictions on how nonprofits, businesses, and other community groups operate, which means there are still thousands, tens of thousands of kids who don't have access to any in-person in-person learning supports despite schools opening. And I don't think people realize that.
Yeah. So your kids are enrolled in something called EarthPath. And your point being that this education program has to stay closed until the stay-at-home order is lifted. Is that right?
Yes. So any of us who are using learning pods where, you know, one or two families come together and support each other to learn at home, that is not allowed to operate under the stay-at-home order and the provincial restrictions. Any programs like EarthPath is an outdoor education program that takes place in the forest. And it's also prevented from opening at this time. Even though it's outdoors, there's safety protocols in place.
Right.
And because the Ontario government hasn't been forthcoming about anything, any timelines about when businesses or other groups can expect to open, the instability for so many families and kids is unbelievably stressful because we rely on these support systems, not only for our kids' well-being and education, but also to work.
And what's it been like losing that for your family?
Well, it was really hard because when our kids heard that schools were opening, they were so excited. And the relief about being able to see friends, see their mentors and educators, and get back outside and into the forest, only for us to have to explain to them that that actually wasn't going to happen. and we're not able to tell them when. And, you know, for a lot of kids, that would be okay. But when you have kids who are already struggling with learning difficulties, mental health problems, you know, other challenges, this sort of loss is really confusing and really overwhelming for them at a time when everything else is already really hard.
Yeah. And I find as a parent, just generally trying to predict and give an end date is very, very challenging. And I'm not even talking about education. I'm just talking about like life and other things outside of schooling.
And we've reached out to CHEO. We've reached out to Ottawa Public Health several times, myself and other families. And we keep getting directed back to our school boards. And we're trying to explain that if it was an option for our kids to be in school, they would be there.
Right.
But it's not.
And the school boards in turn would say, we are waiting for direction from the province on when we can resume these things.
Well, so these programs aren't actually related. Many of them don't have anything to do with the public school system. But
okay.
For a lot of us, our kids require a level of support and intervention that just isn't available in the public system because of a lack of resources. And so obviously we can sign our kids up for in-person school at any time and they will be accepted. But whether like there isn't going to be the help and support they need because there just isn't enough staff available to support so many kids who are struggling, not only because of the pandemic, but were struggling before the pandemic even happened.
What's it been like then overall for you?
I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted. My friends that I talk to are overwhelmed. They don't know where to get help. You reach out to community groups, to CHEO. There isn't support available. We're offered websites, you know, a parenting website or a number for the distress center.
Right.
What we're trying to advocate for is please help us reopen these programs and services safely. We understand that there needs to be protocols in place, but if exceptions are made for offices and businesses and there can be, you know, several hundred people in Walmart and Costco, why can't a program that serves families who are struggling and in need be opened when we have no idea, you know, what's in store for us? And I think this inconsistency, we're sort of looking ahead and realizing we're on our own. And we need to advocate and be loud and ask for help, but we're all really tired.
Yeah.
And it feels insurmountable and like no one is really listening to us.
How old are your kids, Sarah?
My kids are 8, 12, and almost 15.
Yeah, full house.
We have a full house. So I have elementary school, middle school, and high school.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on the positive side, the case count continues to go down. And hopefully it holds. Dr. Etches has talked about the sweet spot of November where we were managing with low case counts and we were more open. This program was available before Christmas?
Yes, it was.
So with the newish lockdowns is when it went away or when it was forced to shut. Okay. So
and
hopefully
so
when things come back up, this will be one of the things that starts back up again.
We hope, but we don't know. And that's the scary part for so many of us is that this fall, we really had to get creative and be resourceful and come up with ways to support our kids with their education, with their mental health, with accessing services that, you know, weren't necessarily available and figuring out how to do virtual support. And I think the fear is that we don't know what's coming. And it feels like once the majority of the kids went back to school, everyone sort of moved on, even though not all of our kids in Ottawa have access to in-person support. There are kids who have still sort of fallen through the cracks. And who do we get that? Who do we ask for help at this point? Who can help us advocate to reopen these programs, to get learning pods working again, and to get families in touch with safe in-person support? Because the isolation for kids and families is really at this point detrimental and scary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because at this point, you know, I honestly thought, you know, going into 2021, things would start getting better.
I know.
It doesn't feel like that.
No,
yet.
It doesn't. And we all felt that way. And we are going to get there. It's just when, and there's no definitive answer. Sarah, I do have to go. I really appreciate your time and good luck. And I know you're tired. But it is a very big challenge for sure. And hopefully you've got some good news coming down the pipe.
Thanks so much for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Sarah McConnell, a parent whose kids are learning from home. By the way, I'm on the air, Graham Richardson, because Christy Cameron's been knocked off the air. She's working from home. The reason for that, there's a fairly major power outage in the around Baseline, the Queensway, Carlington area, Glabar Park, Whitehaven, Lincoln Heights, all can about 10,000 people. Christy is caught in that, and she is trying to get back up on air when she gets her power back on, and Hydro Ottawa is updating, and hopefully the power will be restored for Christy in the next couple of hours. I'm singing that
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Graham Richardson, sitting in for Christy Cameron, who was blown off the air by a power outage in her neighborhood. She's working from home. About 10,000 people in the Carlington, McKellar Heights area knocked offline. So Christy's trying to get back up. In the meantime, I'm going to be filling in. One of the news stories we're following is the change in Quebec to the rules. Some businesses are going to be able to reopen next week on the Gatineau side. There's still going to be a curfew, but hair salons are one of the parts of the economy that will be reopening. Here is Premier Francois Legault.
From February 8th, everywhere in Quebec, stores, hairdressers, and museums will reopen throughout Quebec and will gradually reopen CEGEP and universities.
Mo DeLisa is the owner of Coiffeur Mo DeLisa Hair Salon in Gatineau. Mo joins us on the line. How busy are you with your phones, Mo? Are people calling in trying to book appointments already?
Yes, it's been insane. I have an average of about 10 voicemails per half an hour, so it's insane.
I must admit, as a broadcaster, one of the first calls I make whenever there's a reopening, or at least that happened last spring, was to get my hair cut. You're seeing the same thing. How have you fared through the latest lockdown?
It's been, what I find really the hardest part is always the, we're supposed to reopen such date, and we're supposed to reopen such date, when they just keep pushing it back.
Yeah.
Because it's stressful for everyone and for the employees as well. And as a business owner as well, of course.
Yeah, it's the unpredictability of it, and also the unpredictability of the virus itself. You feel like you're in a good spot for a week or for a month, and then things spike somewhere else and it affects you. What's that like, trying to negotiate that?
That as well is really hard because, to be honest, I was not necessarily expecting that we would be reopening next week. From what I was hearing and everyone was considering, especially us being so close to Ottawa that this isn't reopening yet, I was still planning on it being closed for another 2-3 weeks or so.
So you've got to get going pretty quickly. But I guess because you've done this before, we've all learned, right?
Yeah, we have. We have. Like, for example, I did not, like the first time when we closed down back in March, I would just keep changing customers' appointments according to whatever they would say would be the reopening date. But this time I just put a voicemail on our message box and just said, like, we'll call you back whenever it's official.
As best you just got to roll with it when it comes. Are you finding... did you find in the spring when you reopened, because I believe your side opened before ours, were Ontario people coming for haircuts? And are you seeing that again?
Ontario people were coming for haircuts last spring. So far, I do have to say most of the voicemails that have been getting have been from our regular customers, not as many Ontario people. I do have a few, but not as many as back in spring.
On the Quebec side. So people are adhering to the advice to stay in your own province until things... things
so
improve.
Far, it seems like it, but however, it is just not even 24 hours after the announcement. So I'm thinking maybe some people in Ontario don't even know yet that Quebec is reopening.
Right, could be. So, how far ahead are you now booking when you get off with us and you get on the phone and answer some of those calls? Are you booking right into next week now?
It depends because I'm really calling some customers. Like for each of my different, I do have 8 stylists, so I am booking for next week for some of them, and I am booking for like in about 2 weeks for others. it really depends.
Got it. Are you excited?
Yes.
You want to get back to normal, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever that means in this year.
I can't remember anymore.
Yeah. Well, good luck. And it's great you took time to talk to us, Moden. We wish you nothing but the best. It's important for everybody, for all businesses to get back up on their feet. And it's great you're thriving despite the challenging times.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. That's Moda Lisa, the owner of Coiffeur Moda Lisa Hair Salon in Gatineau. And she is busy. Her phone is ringing. She is booking into next week. People are excited over there. We are expecting to hear from the Education Minister and the Chief Medical Officer of Health at 4 o'clock about the plan on schools. The Premier also saying there's going to be an economy announcement on Monday. And I will remind you the stay-at-home order is due to expire the following day, the Tuesday. So the decision would be, is the stay-at-home order staying in place? And usually what they do is they keep it in place for 2 cycles of the virus. So I wouldn't think they would keep it in place for another week. It would probably, or for a cycle of the virus, would be at least 14 days. So I think the decision would be, we will do that another 14 days, or we will not. And we'll have to wait until Monday to hear about that. We're going to go to the CTV newsroom, and I've got all your headlines in just a moment. Stay with us. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Christy Cameron. I'm just right here dancing around to the rhythm that you play when you're breaking my heart. You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA. Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Christy Cameron. She's dealing with a power outage at home, so I'm stepping in here and glad to be with you. We have been paying a lot of attention to infectious diseases, obviously, more so than any of us have in our entire lifetimes, I would argue, over the last 12 months or 10 months or whatever it's been. It's been a blur. There is now a new concern on the infectious disease front that is non-COVID. Dan Riskin is our CTV science and technology specialist. The good news just keeps flowing, eh, Dan?
Oh, it's flowing, all right. It's the season for flowing. But, you know, I think part of it is that we all are just more hyper-aware. And so These kinds of things wouldn't have caught our attention before. And now we're noticing them. And the world has always been this scary. It's just hasn't been paying as much attention, I think.
Generally, when you get knocked off virtually everything in your life, you start to pay attention to these things like you do all the time. Tell us about this this particular one that's causing concern amongst chimps because of the transmissibility between chimps.
Yeah. So it's a disease of chimpanzees. It's occurring in a sanctuary in Sierra Leone. And, you know, the thing is, it's a disease that has only affected chimpanzees, but this is a disease that's been found to be caused by a bacteria that is closely related to something that hurts people. And so there's some concern that, like SARS-CoV-2, which jumped from some kind of an animal reservoir into people, that this could potentially jump from chimpanzees to people. And so people are just being, you know, we're worried about chimpanzees. But we're also, you know, we've learned our lesson about transmissibility to humans. And so it's this disease that these chimpanzees get. It appears to be 100% fatal. They go to sleep feeling fine, and they don't make it through the night. It's very, very quick. Sometimes they're fine in the morning. They get it in the morning, and then by the afternoon, they're dead. It's a terrible disease where they become very, very bloated. There seems to be a lot of gas, you know, expanding stomach and things, diarrhea, stuff like this. So very, very hard on these chimpanzees. And as I said, they think it's 100% fatal, that every single chimpanzee that gets this dies. And so they're worried about this spreading from beyond the sanctuary into other wild populations and, of course, the potential for it to spread to people. But, you know, the important thing is there's no evidence that it can jump to people. It's just that we know we need to be very careful.
Okay, so it's not there yet, but it's sort of in the watch category, given everything that we've learned in the last 11 months.
Yeah, and this is another case where science really is showing off how far it's come, because this is a mysterious disease that people had noticed a couple years ago, and they were really having trouble figuring out what was causing it. And an amazing international team came in, got samples, and this was happening in the middle of an Ebola outbreak. And so it was very difficult for them to get their samples out of Sierra Leone and back to the United States. They had some samples that sat in a minus 80 freezer in Sierra Leone for 2 years before they could get them out. But once they got them back to the States and were able to do their genomic sequencing and all these fancy things that they do, they were able to figure out exactly not only what this bacterium was, but also what genes it has, how those genes are affecting the chimpanzee, how it relates to other kinds of bacteria that exist in people and other animals, and really just get a real good picture of what's going on, answer a ton of questions that otherwise this would have been just mysterious disease. And I think that's sort of what's shifting now, is that we've got this increased vigilance. I mean, we know how impressive it is that researchers were able to make vaccines to COVID-19 so fast. But that's just one branch of a huge tree of knowledge and expertise and technology that has really blossomed this year, and that will continue to blossom, because we're probably not going to take our eyes off the prize for a couple years to go.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of talk about Barry and a lot of talk about the variants in Barry. Dr. Kareem Kurji is the York Regional Public Health Officer here, discussing the time it takes to become infected in an environment where this new variant is.
We discovered that some of them have actually not spent more than a minute or 2 minutes doing some essential shopping in places. It gives us the impression that this is being transmitted very fast indeed.
The notion of being exposed to the virus, to COVID, over a longer period of time than that, this obviously causes some grave concern about how quickly it can move, Dan.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, it's invisible. And so people have to make these judgment calls about what it takes for it to infect a person, how it goes from one person to another. And so, if I'm wearing a mask, it slows it down. If I'm not wearing a mask, it goes faster. And basically, with these new variants, it seems like there's something about the spike protein on these things that makes it just much better at getting in once it gets into your body. Maybe it requires fewer virus particles. Maybe it takes less time. It's just not exactly clear what the mechanism is. But I think the public health message is that, you know, if we had a sense of what was working before in terms of how careful we had to be, and, you know, if we were outdoors and if we were 6 feet away and all that stuff, we need to assume that whatever was working before probably isn't going to work now, and we need to ramp it up. And so, you know, there's been a lot of sort of terrified people sending out tweets that say it only takes 1 second if nobody's wearing a mask. But the truth is, like, obviously it takes less than 1 second if nobody's wearing a mask. I mean, all it takes is for somebody to breathe out these particles and somebody else to breathe them in, and that doesn't take any time at all. And
right.
In a sense, that was true before, but there seemed to be some kind of a luck variable, this roll of the dice. And it just seems like that roll of the dice has changed its odds. So now, instead of having to roll double sixes for it to get transmitted, it's just as long as you roll, you know, a number that's higher than seven or whatever the analogy is. And so the odds are just better that when you get in those situations, it makes the leap.
Right. I haven't spoken to you on air in quite a few months. It was before the second wave hit. And I know you're a parent. How are you gaming the spring, the late spring, the mid spring, and heading into summer as a parent? Like, when your kids ask you, you know, where do you think we're going to be? Is there a clear answer yet?
There's a paper I just came across. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it says that people who study the patterns of outbreaks in different countries with latitude and temperature are saying that this is definitely a seasonal virus. And so the cold temperatures really do play into its hands. And so with that in mind, you know, new strains aside, that does give me some optimism that come summer, we should have a little bit of a different experience than what we've been having here in the winter. Hopefully it's going to come at us not as hard, although, you know, you don't know until, and it's going to depend on people's behavior and stuff like that. And that seems to, in the estimation of these researchers, be driven by changes in how the immune system functions at these different temperatures. Maybe not so much how the virus does when it's cold outside, but just what's going on physiologically for people in their runny noses and the change in the temperature of the face and stuff like that. So anyway, that gives me some optimism for for spring. The other piece for me as a parent is that it's really been clear in my house what the mental health cost is for the kids of being away from their friends.
Same with
and
me.
That is real. That is not, I mean, it's real in my house for sure, but I'm basing, when I say that's real, that's because, you know, the people who study this stuff say that there is a real issue happening here and these kids are suffering in a very real way. And so that gives us, you know, it's not a no harm policy to keep kids home. And so, you know, it's great that kids are going back into classrooms in other parts of Ontario. You guys have, I believe, had kids go back to class. We don't have that in Toronto yet. Yeah. We're waiting to hear. So that's a big part of the conversation with my kids is about sort of balancing those things and just having a lot of sympathy for them that they really are suffering right now, as our kids all around the world.
And less important than that, I always get asked this, and I don't know what the answer is, but like things like concerts, crowds, sporting events, travel, it seems to me that kind of a resumption of real life is many months away, if not longer.
To know.
Yeah.
It's so hard to know. I mean, would you go to a concert I don't know. When I watch a TV show and people shake hands, I still get like freaked out.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, okay, it's okay. They filmed it before the pandemic. Like,
right.
Go easy on them. But, you know, we've all sort of become a little bit paranoid. And paranoid is not the right word because it's valid. Like, people shouldn't be shaking hands right now. And that should look scary to us. And it will take us a while psychologically to get back. Although some people, you know, are so anxious to get back that they're having secret parties and all that stuff. So,
right.
I think people are resilient. We will get back. This is not the first pandemic that's ever befallen people before, but it's very hard to know what the future is going to look like. And, you know, are people going to be going back to the workplace and taking those risks just to even be in the same space? Or will we get to a point where we say that is definitely in the past and it's hard to even remember what that was like?
Yeah.
It's just hard to know because it was such a different world just 1 year ago.
Yeah. And I cling to something someone, a scientist, tweeted out, like pandemics do have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And we are, he thinks, very much towards the end of the middle, if that makes sense. And we're heading towards the end. And so it's been so hard on people. A lot of people can't accept that. They think it's always going to be bad. And that's not right either.
No, I mean, it's there are probably going to be things that stick around afterwards and they're going to be lasting effects. And we're going to see what long COVID is like and all that stuff. But I mean, I know everybody's frustrated because we wish we'd just all been jabbed in the arm and gotten this vaccine and we'd be back to our normal lives by now. And it seems like the line just keeps getting pushed back. And that is extremely frustrating. But the light that is at the end of that tunnel that we can see is very bright. And those vaccines are looking just fabulous. And we also know that these vaccines are changeable if we need them to be, because these new variants might throw us a curveball. We have a plan for that. And so, you know, there's a lot of reason for optimism and there's a lot of reason to feel good about the future, but we're not done and it's still a long stretch. And I think that is just hard. That is just really hard. And that mental health piece of it is just it's very real.
Dan Riskin, thanks so much. Great to talk to you again. Appreciate this.
Yeah, stay well. Thanks so much.
All right. That's Dan Riskin, the CTV Science and Technology Specialist. When we come back, we're going to speak with Richard Krause about the Golden Globes. Yes, they're still happening.
Action!
Listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
If you're just joining us, I'm Graham Richardson in for Christy Cameron. Christy is in a power outage at home, so unable to broadcast. Wonderful, though, to talk to Richard Krause, a host of CTV's Pop, Life, and Film Critic. Great to hear from you, Richard.
Nice to hear from you, Graham.
The Golden Globes are going on.
Mm-hmm.
It is Hollywood's attempt to keep things going because lots of people are home consuming. Tell us about what's special about this year, the highlights for the nominations.
Well, there's a lot of stuff this year that people have actually seen because we're all at home.
Yeah.
So many of us have Netflix. So many of us have Amazon. And for the first time, and increasingly so, over the last couple of years, it's the streamers that are dominating here. So right now we have Netflix absolutely dominating with 42 total nominations for its movies and television shows. And then Amazon is second with 10 nods. And that precludes Universal, all the Paramount, all the big studios, Warner Brothers, all the big studios that normally, traditionally have dominated the nominations, they're being pushed aside by these streamers. What that means for the consumer, though, is that instead of having this list of movies that maybe you didn't make it out to see at the theater,
right,
maybe you thought you'd catch up with it at some point, you can actually very easily watch The Trial of the Chicago 7, Mank, or if you want to watch a series, The Queen's Gambit or The Crown, all of which have been nominated for multiple nominations here. So I think that the interest in the award show itself, which happens on February 28th, and will be virtual, kind of like they did with the Emmys. Everyone's going to be socially distanced. People will be accepting their awards from home, that kind of thing. I think that audiences will actually maybe have a bit more invested here because they've actually seen the movies.
And, you know, it's funny because in previous years when we've talked or I've done, you know, interviews on Golden Globes or the Oscars, I see one of five, you know, or I'm not a huge movie buff. It's funny, your list of all those movies, I've seen almost all of them, and the series too, which speaks to the casual viewer, exactly what you're saying, that a lot of the consumption is way up.
It is way up. I mean, I think one of the things that we'll take away from this pandemic is that we do have a need to be entertained. We want to laugh and cry and listen to music, and we want a stream of entertainment to come to our homes and into our lives. The arts are extraordinarily important, and I think that they're often pushed aside in times of crisis because you think to yourself, well, what importance is a movie or a television show? But when we're in a pandemic like this, and there's a lot of people who are home alone or a lot of people who are just home way more than they normally would be, these are the things that are helping to pass the time, that are helping to keep us all kind of on an even keel. And they are important. You know, new music, new television shows, that kind of thing, they make us feel better. And that's what we need right now.
And, you know, it's kind of, it re-engages people. It gives people that sense of community. And it's one of those things, I honestly believe, when we're through this, I think movies are going to have a resurgence because people will appreciate the outrageously expensive popcorn and the cushy chairs and going out again. I think you're going to see a surge in that. And maybe that's naive, but once the safety is taken care of, I really think people are going to be anxious to do things like that.
Yeah, I think it's hardwired into our DNA. And I've said this over and over again, but I believe it to be true. I think that we are meant to enjoy movies, live music, theater, whatever it might be, as a community.
Yeah.
It's a communal experience. We sit there and you laugh and you cry and you hear someone else laughing in the corner, and it makes you feel good when you're in a group watching something. And I think that movies, theater, and plays and that kind of thing are going to come roaring back after this. As soon as people feel safe enough to be in close proximity with one another, I think there will be no stopping people from trying to go see live music and go see the movies and all that kind of thing. Live music, I'm particularly missing.
Me too.
And it is something that I would give almost anything right now.
Just go see a band.
Go see a concert.
Quickly, before I let you go, some of them Canadians have not seen and are still coming down the pipe for Canadians. What would you recommend, which films that are in the mix for Golden Globes?
Yeah, there's a couple here that you're going to have to wait a little bit to see, but they will be released before the Golden Globes. Nomadland is the one. Frances McDormand plays a woman whose company town just goes bust, and her husband dies, and she buys an RV, and she hits the road, and she lives this nomadic experience. And it's based on real life. It is beautiful. It is inspiring. Frances McDormand is going to win all the acting prizes going once again this year, like she did a few years ago. So check out that one. And if you haven't seen One Night in Miami, it's on Amazon right now. It's so good. And there's a young actor in it, Eli Gorey from Halifax, who plays Cassius Clay, not yet named Muhammad Ali at the point in which we see him in the movie. And it's just tremendous stuff. So it's really worth a look.
What's the name of that one again?
One Night in Miami.
One Night in Miami. I've seen the trailer, I think, scrolling through. It's worth a watch. Richard, great to talk to you. And the Golden Globes, remind us, when are they again?
February 28th. And Tina Fey, Amy Poehler are the hosts. We love them. They've hosted before. And they will be on opposite ends of the country, one in New York, one in Los Angeles. But they have such great chemistry that span of miles in between won't matter. I think it'll be a good show.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Graham.
All right. That is Richard Krause, host of CTV's Pop Life and our film critic. We're heading to the newsroom, and Zach McGibbon with your headlines in the CTV newsroom. I'm Graham Richardson in for Christy Cameron.